Hey everyone, I'm Dahlia.
And I'm Alma. This is Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast.
Buddy, this is exciting. We're talking about a really fun movie here. Now, we had discussed the 19... What year did it come out?
81 or 83.
Version of this movie. But today, we're talking about The Thing from Another World, 1951. So, remember, we're doing all movies pre-1960, and this was kind of fun. Okay, I'm not going to lie, though. It looks like it was made earlier than 1951, right?
I really can't tell with anything that is in black and white. I'm terrible. Like, I don't know what's going on. I didn't do history very well. Whenever I see these, it might as well have been, like, the 1800s. Like, I make jokes about it all the time, but in all seriousness, I just do not understand what is going on in the past.
I mean, not to take away from the movie. It's fun. It's a fun movie. But it just looks like it was like a little bit like more earlier than 1951. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it surprisingly has a very low budget. And I think that might have added to it. But I think that's what adds to the film's lasting quality is the fact that they didn't overdo anything that looks bad now. I think it holds up for being low budget and being made of that time.
Of that time, yesteryear.
Of that time. In the days of yore.
Okay, so some of these taglines are hilarious. So we have, look out, it's the thing from another world. I mean, just go ahead and put the title in there. There's no problem with that. Or how about, it creeps, it crawls, it strikes without warning. That one's a little false, though. It didn't creep or crawl. But I get it. They were trying to get some excitement about this. And then, where did it come from? How did it get here? What is it? one, I think, is the funniest.
There were quite a few taglines that I found in newspaper ads that were just a series of questions. What is it? What's it going to do? Who's it going to get? And it's just a bunch of questions.
Okay, so first we're going to just dive into, we'll leave the writers for a little bit, Alma. Can you tell us who the cast is in this? And Alma has this thing where she wants to credit everybody in the film. So this is a long list of characters.
this is funny too, because a lot of them are uncredited. So what I write these people and I'll put like who IMDb or Wikipedia says are in the film. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. But then while I'm watching the film, I'll have to add people in. And there is a whole list of people that are credited and a whole list of people that are not credited. But I'll tell you why I mentioned some of these people. And because this has a very big cast, there's a lot of people, a lot of doctors, a lot of scientists.
I'm surprised. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but there are so many people in this movie and each of them plays a role. And it's not just like, because they can't really have extras in this movie. They're just not really, because everybody's playing a very specific role. But Alma, go ahead. You said Margaret Sheridan.
Margaret Sheridan as Nikki Nicholson. Nikki Nicholson. I love that. Science assistant, also credited as a secretary to Dr. Carrington. Kenneth Toby as Captain Patrick Hendry. Robert Cornthwaite as Dr. Arthur Carrington. Douglas Spencer as Ned Scotty Scott. James Young as Lieutenant Eddie Dykes. Dewey Martin as Mob. Robert Nichols as Lieutenant Ken Mac McPherson. William Self as Corporal Barnes. Edward Franz as Dr. Stern. John Dirks as Dr. Chapman. Sally Creighton as Mrs. Chapman. Now, she was credited, and then they didn't bother to put the husband in it, because it's like, here is Dr. Chapman and his wife, but only the wife was credited in the movie. James Arness as the Thing and Nicholas Byron as Tex. There's still a bunch of other people, but I tried to add anybody who they spoke directly to or was like, here's Dr. Voorhees. See, I didn't even list Dr. Voorhees, but I don't remember him really saying much. And so they're just a very big, big cast. They wanted to make sure everybody talked.
Exactly. But I think they missed a golden opportunity here with William Self. They should have just had his character play William Self. That way he can play William Self as Self.
As himself.
Yeah, but okay, Alma has some controversy or some juicy gossip or whatever you want to call it about the writers. Yes, I love this. Here. Yeah,
let's spill the tea. Let's spill the 60, 70, 80-year-old tea. Okay, so the most influential film that Nyby directed is The Thing from Another World. He is the director of the film, which continues to attract viewers and critical attention more than 70 years after its release, and which was selected in 2001 for preservation into the U.S. National Film Registry. Nyby's credit as the director has been challenged by many critics. Howard Hawks, the film's producer, was on the set for most of the filming and is noted as one of the greatest film directors. Nyby said of the controversy in 1982. 1982 is the year that The Thing came out. Did Hawks direct it? That's one of the most inane and ridiculous questions I've ever heard, and people keep asking. That it was Hawks' style. Of course it was. This is a man I studied and wanted to be like. You would certainly emulate and copy the master you're sitting under, which I did. Anyway, if you're taking painting lessons from Rembrandt, you don't take the brush out of the master's hands. Now, this was confirmed by Hawks of the time and for a few decades, but later on in life, Hawks did admit to having more of an influence on the director role of Nyby. So it is still, I don't know, like, who are you going to say directed it? Well, that's who's listed, and they both went along with it. During the film itself, there are a few things that you can tell are in the style of the master and the mentor, right? The mentor. I don't want to say master. That sounds awful. But So Nyby is the one listed. And also, there is a lot of issue with the writers. Not issue, but we have a writer, and then there's a couple of people uncredited for the writing, and it's also based on the novella. So this film was based on the novella Who Goes There by Don A. Stewart. The credits on this film list the author by his real name, the science fiction editor and writer John W. Campbell Jr. The film was loosely adapted by Charles Lederer, who is credited, with uncredited writers, rewrites from Howard Hawks and Ben Hecht from the 1938 novella Who Goes There. The story was first published in Astounding Science Fiction under Campbell's pseudonym Don A. Stewart. Campbell had just become Astounding's managing editor when the novella appeared in its pages. So there's just a lot of information to do with the directors and the writer. The film was loosely adapted with some rewrites. And then in the credits, there's only one writer credited, and that's Charles Lederer with uncredited. Like, I don't know why they do that whole uncredited thing. It's the money, it's the contracts.
I think it has a little bit to do with everything. Because if you have, I mean, it happens today. Actors and actresses and producers will put input and they might change some things. And if you put every single person on there, it'll be a long list. So I think they put the main, but I think that whoever contributes still gets some kind of pay. They may not be credited. I was watching last night, I watched the movie The Bubble. It was so fucking funny on Netflix. And David Duchovny does this in that movie. He's changing the script, and he's writing a whole bunch of different things, changing it up, writing new dialogue, writing new storylines and everything. So, I mean, it just goes like, even though they did it in a parody kind of fun way, I know that that does happen, and whether he would have been credited, you know, who knows? It's a little bit different in songwriting. I know in songwriting, if the if somebody else usually writes the music for, I mean, yeah, the lyrics or something for somebody, if the singer decides to change some of those lyrics, the singer will be credited as a songwriter as well. So just a little tidbit there that I've noticed. It's nothing official, but these are just things that I've noticed from watching movies and listening to music. That's it.
Yeah, I'm like, it happens a lot. We see a lot of the uncredited and credited things, and we just want to make sure that people are credited. Because, I mean, if you had something to do with it, you rewrote it, or it was inspired by, those two things are of note. And I think that we should mention them. Just like I try to make sure that everybody who lived, they even have like cooks, they had dog sled herders. A herder, do you herd dogs? I don't know what you do with those. You like shepherd them? But anyway,
they had indigenous,
yeah.
They had indigenous people in the, as part of the cast of your, or at least as characters.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they're not listed as... as credited or who their names was. A cook was, but I think they're supposed to have like two cooks, and they took the time back in the day to introduce people. You know, they were like, hello, here is my man, and here is my doctor, and and his secretary. And they would just take that, you know, that's too much work. Like, how did they get anything done? You walk in the room and it's like, hey, Dahlia, here is Alma. And then that you would just have to keep, you know, on and on. Every room you walk into, it must have been exhausting. Welcome back, you know, and then you'd have to say hello to everybody in the room again, you know. And in this case, there were so many doctors that it's like that skit. Doctor, 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 doctor. Yeah. Going back and forth.
I love that. Okay, so the short summary of this is scientists and American Air Force officials fend off a bloodthirsty alien organism while at a remote Arctic post. Okay, Alma, had you seen this movie before?
I do not think I saw it, and that's just going to be my stance. I know that, you know, back in the day, you know, I might have caught something, but this didn't seem familiar to me. I don't think that I had seen it other than the monster, other than the thing. Nothing looked familiar to me about this film.
Oh, really? I thought for sure you had seen it before, even if you didn't remember it. I had seen it before. It's been a while. I called up Alma, though. I was like, there was a part, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, but there's some very funny quotes going on in this movie. And I'm like, I call her and I'm like, are you sure we haven't discussed this movie before? Because I'm positively we discussed this scene recently. And I was like, no, I promise we didn't. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But it's like some funny quotes. But I swear it feels like we had seen it recently and had discussed it recently. And I thought we had discussed it for the podcast. But Alma says no. So y'all, if we're redoing a movie, blame it on Alma.
It's so much pressure. It is. And it's like sometimes I called you though, and I was like, we've had discussions so much of movies that sometimes we think that we covered it. So I'm like, no, I have a very good memory. We did not cover this. And you know, we've done The Thing because I love The Thing. I love the 1982 remake, reimagining of this. It's such a good movie. I love it.
And that was a live stream. So if y'all look in our it was for Alma's birthday, I believe, if I remember correctly. We did a birthday live stream on that.
I think it might be on YouTube. No, I'm saying yes. I think it might be on YouTube as well. All right. Okay. So what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna to keep it the flow of the movie, you know, going. This movie seemed longer than it was. It's only an hour and a half. And I just felt like it was 2 hours. There's a lot going on. I'm using Wikipedia just to kind of keep track of everybody and everything. But, you know, if we say doctor, just go with it. Okay. It's a doctor or it's a military dude. Okay. So don't get after us. In Anchorage, journalist Ned Scott, Scotty Scott, is looking for a store, and he visits the Officers Club of Alaskan Air Command, where he meets Captain Pat Hendry and his co-pilot Eddie Dykes. And flight navigator Ken Mac McPherson, General Fogarty, orders them to fly to Polar Expedition 6 at North Pole per a request from his lead scientist, Nobel Laureate Dr. Arthur Carrington. He's radioed that he has spotted an unusual aircraft that has crashed nearby. So they head out there. This was
You're already missing the most important part. Which is the hilarious quote. Yes, the quote from the door, because it comes into play later. First of all, it's hilarious, and it comes into play later. So they're all sitting around playing cards, and they're drinking and everything, and all of a sudden the captain gets called to the general's little hut, whatever. So he goes over there, and when he opens the door, there's like a blizzard going on, and he opens the door, and he's like, he opens the door to walk in for like a second, not even a second, a millisecond. And the general yells, "Close the door." It's just like, he barely made
it
in.
He keeps shouting it.
And then again, he tells somebody else when they come in, "Close the door." The general is just so funny. And then that's when he gets all that information that Alma said. And then as he's going out, the captain is leaving the quarters there, he says, "I'll make sure that I close the door." It wasn't just him yelling, it was just like a funny little thing they had going in the dialogue. I don't know, I just found it hilarious.
I know that they did ask the Army Air Force, both, I don't know, was it at the time they were they separate yet in the 50s?
Oh, they were already separate.
Okay, so they were separate, but they were asked if they would like to cooperate in the filming of this movie, but they did not want to. They wanted the heavy sense that UFOs aren't real, alien activity is false, and they just wanted to completely separate themselves from that. So this is the pretend. But it would have been cool if they could use some aircraft, you know, or something from the real Air Force and pilots and stuff like that, but they didn't. I started off trying to count the number of times that these men were sitting around talking about the dames and the girls and the women. And it's like, dude, is that all they do? Like, in the first 2 minutes, they mentioned women four times. And
well,
they're
there's no women on their base.
But they're going on and on about it. So it's just funny because I started saying it. What about the dames? Trying to do an accent. Like,
did they use the word dames? I don't remember.
Yes, they use the word dames. And I'm like, is that a bad word? We don't use it anymore. Is it? I don't know. But they used it, and then they talked about the girls.
Well, if it is, you've already said it many times, and you've offended many a dame.
We'll just bleep it out many a dame.
I don't know.
But they were obsessed with women. They needed them. Are there going to be dames there? And then there were. There was like two women, you know.
one was married. Uh-huh. And the other one was already spoken for. A lovely
young
lady.
Not really, because I like the way they teased about it. Like,
well, I don't know. They were flirting the whole time. So,
yes.
It was the assistant to the scientist. And I'm going to call her the assistant because she was no secretary. She was all up in there involved in everything. She was more than that.
Yeah, she was the science assistant and one. And then the other side, it said secretary. But she was the one doing all the notes. And obviously, there's a lot of dialogue they're getting into in this. It's like being very science. It's just like... they've got all the equipment. All these doctors are doing their science shit. So when they fly there, they get there, and that's when they introduce each other to everybody. And it's just like a horde of people in this outpost in Antarctica. Thalia, though, I'm surprised you haven't even mentioned the North Pole.
Well, I don't remember exactly where they call it the North Pole. I'm
you're right,
the Barrow area. Because this happens in the north. The 1980-182 version has it in Antarctica. But they're already talking about weird things going on, because as they're flying in, their navigator they get a call, but their navigator talks about how their coordinates are off by I don't even remember how many degrees. So whatever crash landed in the snow, in the ice there, the North Pole, is affecting their navigation. And speaking of navigation, there was like, you know, they in that little the cockpit of the plane, they had the two pilots and they had the navigator, and I'm thinking like an assistant to the navigator or something. But then all these other people started sticking their heads, and I'm like, quit doing that. You're gonna make the plane crash or something. Just
it's gonna get lopsided.
Stay out there. You can talk while you're out there. You don't need. They already have two extra people besides the pilots. Get the fuck out. I don't know. That was just.
There's a lot of dogs too, and I was wondering, like, everybody have a job, and it was funny to me that the reporter was coming along, like he could just say, "You're coming along," and he gets on the plane too. I like that the reporter came, because this is how they're going to try to, like, he wants a story. He comes to the military, and the military is like, "Sure, come along." Especially to somewhere really, really cold. And he was the one who didn't look like he was dressed appropriately. There was no way that dude is going to survive the cold.
He was the only one. I think that you're right. He was not dressed appropriately. I do want to share this. And I tell people this all the time about my time that I almost did not get to fly up to Barrow, Alaska, which is the northernmost point. And I like to share it because I didn't go. And I think it's hilarious that I still like to share this story. When I was stationed in Anchorage, the pilots would come in and they had to go to Barrow. They would invite anybody who wanted to go if they had to just do a quick turnaround. I don't know why they had to do the quick turnarounds. I'm sure it had something to do with the aircraft or something like that. But they came in and said, you know, "Hey, does anybody want to go up to Barrow?" And I was getting off shift and I was really excited. And I was all like, "Oh, I do." And it was like, "Oh shit, I have a kid in daycare. I can't go." And so I didn't go. And that's my story of not going to Barrow, Alaska.
That was it. She didn't go, everyone.
That was it. I did not go. So, but that's kind of how I saw the journalist going. It's like, "Oh, I'll go." And they're like, "Oh, okay. As long as we have room, just hop on in and let's go."
But that is, it's like, that was a thing that you could do, was like, "Hey, do you want to come do this thing?" And you could get on the plane and go see or go somewhere. I never took advantage of any of that. But one thing I was supposed to be was a crew chief. And that was my first AFSC. I was supposed to go, but I didn't. Immediately, I just didn't want to do like the longest school you could go to. And when you got your, like, you did your ASVAB and you qualified for everything, it was like, you could do whatever, just pick something. And I was like, it was too many jobs in the Air Force, too many, and it was too much. So I was like, "Dad, just put me whatever." Why did they say sure? They looked at me and they're like, "Crew chief, check." I was like, no, please don't do that. But it was for almost about, I think it was like 6 weeks I was supposed to go. And then yeah. I was like,
no offense. I don't see you as a crew chief. I just don't. I don't think you would have liked that one bit.
No, I did not. Obviously I ended up being a lab tech, but Thalia had a cool assignment because every time I looked at this, I was like, how do these people survive in the cold? It's so fucking cold. It feels like burning. Like, it's so cold as burning. It's so cool
because that you go inside. That's why, because you can go inside.
But even when you're outside,
when you go outside, you dress warm, and then when you go inside, it's warm. That's why I always tell people, it's like, you can, I know it's uncomfortable when you're outside in the cold and then there's snow and stuff like that, but anybody can survive in the cold as long as you have somewhere warm to go. Obviously not everybody has a warm place to go, but if you're privileged enough to have a warm house or a warm whatever, then it can
just
be dead.
Get your ass inside. Okay. So when they get there, they meet the radio operator, Tex, Dr. Chapman, his wife, a whole bunch of people, blah, 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 blah. And then they're like, "Okay, but wait till you see, I have some pictures." So dude is like, "We've got this Polaroid and it took some still shots." Okay. Yeah. It's something else. Just go along with what I'm saying. Okay. So they're looking at their microfiche. I don't know what the fuck they're looking at. And they have some pictures of what appears to be a meteor. But when they're discussing it, the first thing you notice is it changes directions. And anything falling to the earth, is it going to change directions? You know, something falling isn't just going to go, "Woo, let me head north," and then go south back again. So it crashed into the snow out there, and they're going to head there. But they're already pretty sure this has to be an aircraft of some kind, just because of the speed and the direction that the aircraft was going. And when they go get out there, first of all, they have to get back on the plane. I'm like, why didn't they just fly straight there? That was like, why did they bother landing so they can introduce every? I'm pretty sure they didn't know
exactly. They didn't know exactly where it was yet. They didn't know exactly where they was, because remember they had, and then they also had to, again, they had to change their, or they had to, what's the word I'm looking, correct their coordinates as they were going there because this thing is affecting their navigation.
Oh, it's so affecting shit. Yeah. Okay.
So they go there and they're still thinking that it's an airplane of some sort, a giant airplane, but they still think it's an airplane. They're not thinking alien or spacecraft or anything like that yet. But when they go out there, they should have noticed. I mean, they did. They kind of, before they look through the ice, it's this round, very circular impression in the ice. And then a long tail, because the tail is where it crash landed, right? But it's this very circular thing right there. I mean, I could not believe in aliens or anything. I'd still be like, that's a fucking UFO right there. That's a UFO.
It's a nothing flying but a UFO. Saucer, see?
Yeah, exactly like that.
You know, that part there where they stand and they're like, okay, you get to the furthermost edge of what you see under the ice. And they're standing there and they end up being in a circle. That was actually filmed outside in 100-degree weather. And it just doesn't look like it. And that's why I think it's great that the film just still stands up, because you can't see those things because it's in black and white. But one of the things that they did use in order to show their breath, which they did make sure to do in the 82 movie, was that they're actually cold. When we see their breath, it's because they use the cold storage facility to film in, and that made their breath show up. But right there, can you imagine wearing all that clothing, standing outside and sweating? And so they're like, but how are we going to take a... Oh, go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, but some of this was filmed in a cold area, Glacier National Park in, I don't know my geography, some part of Montana. Yeah.
Hey, you could have just said that. And then when people ask where, oh, you look it up yourself, Google it.
No, I'm not your Google.
That's good enough. Yeah. And so they're like, how are we going to get a better look at this? And this is so funny to me. And I'm not making fun at all. It's just funny to me because it's so realistic to act first and think later. And they're like, okay, a storm's coming in. We only have about an hour and a half or something like that before we need to get the hell back on our plane and head back. Let's see if we could get a better look at this flying saucer. And they put out, what is it, bomb stuff or TNT, I don't know what the hell they're using, to explode the ice. And when they get back to, you know, to let it off or detonate whatever they put the explosives in the ice, it destroys the aircraft. They're like, oh, well, we destroyed it. Let's go see if we can pick up some pieces and use them for testing of this strange alloy that this thing is made out of. They destroyed it.
Yeah. Well, supposedly the stuff they use is standard operating as procedure for exploding through ice. That's what they say. And then so they end up seeing something in there. They describe it as, I don't know, 8 feet tall, and they decide to take it with them. They have to pickaxe through it. So these poor, I don't know, I only saw two people with an axe. They had to cut it out. And I found it very interesting that they end up having to carry it back with the dogs, with all these people, because there was a lot of people there. And I was just the whole time I'm thinking, like, how much does that block of ice weigh? That's a lot of weight being added on. You have to calculate for weight and stuff. I hope, what did they do? Let's calculate for in case we have to bring back an alien in a block of ice. You have to calculate the weight, because that could affect, you know, the aircraft when it takes off and when it lands and when it's flying. That's more gas being used or air fuel being used. I'm just being stupid about it. But anyways, because it was a big block of ice.
See, and I'm not even... thinking about that, because, you know, I probably avoided watching the movie because of sci-fi, and I was really just not into sci-fi. I had to pretend I was into sci-fi for my husband, because that's how I met him. Like, he gave me a book to read, and I had to, like, pretend I liked it and stuff. I don't know why I was working so hard to, like, get a man. For real. I was, like, reading this shit. Well, anyway, probably because there's a lot of science in it, that whenever that stuff I don't understand or can't grasp, I just kind of gloss over it. Like, they said it, it's a scientist, it's a doctor, therefore it's real. But you're right. That plane was way over. And, you know, they showed it and it's small. it wasn't a big aircraft that they're using. And they take the chunk of ice back and they're looking at it. There's like a humanoid like figure inside of it that's almost 8 feet tall, they think. And are they going to let it thaw out? Or
No.
I know they do it by mistake so quickly.
They do it by mistake. No, that's why they broke out the windows and stuff, because they needed to keep that room cold. They decided that they were going to keep it on ice. And then that's when they started communicating with the main base, wherever Anchorage may be. I don't know where the general is that they're talking with. Oh, yeah, it was Anchorage. So they're supposed to keep it cold. Yes. And they start taking shifts. And this one guy, this poor guy, I feel so bad for him. He decides he can't look at it anymore because the eyes are open and the eyes are creeping him out. So he grabs a blanket and he throws it over. The only problem was it was a heating blanket?
Electric blanket.
Uh-huh. You know, to keep you warm. He uses it on top of the ice block and it was still plugged in. And so I guess he put it back.
Encino manned. Yeah, he turned around and they Encino manned.
He was afraid of it, I guess. But yeah, like Alma said, it Encino man came out, but it wasn't. It was a big giant alien dude that came out.
I do like that they didn't show it in up close or linger the camera on it. And in the few shots we do see, it's kind of blurred and out of focus. And I think that was really smart, because a lot of the times when people watch the old sci-fi horror movies, they're like, the costume doesn't look too good. It's too humanoid. You can tell they're wearing a sack on their face, whatever. And in this case, because of that kind of keeping it out of shot in the beginning, it does make it like scarier, you know what I mean? Can you imagine like going to the theater and like, what is it for real? That's why they kept putting it in the tagline. What is it? Where is it? Turn around, look. Everything kind of jumping at you.
But at no time did it crawl. Sorry.
It didn't crawl.
Not that we saw at least.
Yeah. The poor guy in charge of looking at it ends up shooting at the alien, and then the dogs attack the alien.
Oh, this is horrible. So the alien goes outside and the dogs had already been aware. They were already barking. They were like in the 1980, I keep saying 81, 82.
82, it's 82.
Like the 1982 version. The dogs know what's going on. They're like, you stupid humans. I mean, if we could tell you what we're thinking, you guys are idiots. But yeah, unfortunately, a couple of the dogs get killed trying to, you know, attack this thing. But they did a good number on it, because I think, if I remember correctly, this is where we see that the alien loses its arm.
Yeah, they ripped his arm off.
Uh-huh. So that's pretty cool that one of the dogs like took off.
If you're going to mess with me, I'm going to take your arm with me. And now they have a specimen to examine. And this is where you have like the scientists and the doctors and everybody checking this out. And they do take the time to say that Dr. Carrington, the silver haired one, that's how I listed him, was like, oh, he's like the super smartest dude. He's like Nobel Prize, blah, blah, blah. Like they give all like his background and everything like that. And he is just completely just taken aback by this alien, and he wants to study it. And did you know this movie only takes place over 2 days?
I guess it does. Yeah. I didn't think about it, but it does. Yeah.
There were certain points in it where I thought perhaps this is weeks later or whatever. No, this is just 2 days. They are examining the arm and quickly take specimens. And as the arm is sitting there, it had blood on it from the dogs. It starts to reanimate and move on its own. They're discussing the what it appears to be like and trying to find similarities to things on the earth. But they know that this is otherworldly, and they are comparing it to plant life. The fact that it, I don't know how, because they're like, it has this green substance coming from it. But then it's saying that it is feeding off of blood. And I'm like, so what does that make it plant-like? Are they thinking like Venus flytrap stuff? I didn't get that part really, but that is what they...
structurally and cellular, it's plant-like. And then, they gave a couple of examples of carnivorous plants that...
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what he's thinking, but in giant form, humanoid form. But yeah,
like
I was
a giant carrot. That's what one of them said.
One of them said giant carrot. But I was really pissed off because so like later on, that scientist decides that he's going to conduct some experiments on how it grows or how it's living off blood. And he's over here wasting blood. He's wasting blood. I was so mad because they're in a remote, isolated location. They could very well need that blood if somebody gets injured, whatever, for whatever reason. And he's over here wasting that blood, trying to grow more aliens. That's basically what he's doing. That's what it looks like to me. He's trying to grow, I don't know, dozens of these little aliens, but they look plant-like as they're growing. They start budding and then they're growing fast. Because he talked about how they had just budded. And the next time we see them, they're like they look like sunflower length. And sunflowers are like really tall. But he's wasting this blood. And like I said, it's 3 units, I believe, of plasma that he had wasted right there. I'm like, motherfucker. I was so mad at him.
I thought this was going on over a period of time. No, he does this immediately. And that's how quickly these cells regenerate, grow, and whatnot. They're showing the little plants and they look like they're pulsating, and then they listen to it and it says it sounds like a baby crying inside a womb.
I don't remember that. What the fuck? I remember listening, but I don't remember that. Oh,
they put the stethoscope up to it, and I'm like, that's creepy as shit. Why are they letting him just conduct these experiments? All of a sudden, he's the mad scientist character. And conducting these strange experiments with no checking with anyone because he's like the head science dude. And so the head military dude, he finds out because he, like you said, they know that they only have a limited supply of whatever it is. And the science assistant, the woman that he is in love with but won't marry, tells him, I love this because she isn't not sharing or keeping secrets or anything. She's like, read it for yourself. You know, like she's just very open with,
does not care. She's like, she knows that everybody needs to have all the information. She's like, here are his secret files. Go for it.
She has written everything out and she was like, read it for yourself. Cause I'm the dame. So they're doing their, okay. So he figures out what he's doing and he's like, you got to not be doing that. And then so the thing is they have to find where it went. They're looking for the thing. And the thing is that they got to find it. And so the military dudes are using their Geiger counter. But the thing is, and I keep saying the thing and I'm obsessed with saying it.
Sorry about that.
They're using the Geiger counter like an alien, like, and they're like, no, because we have radioisotopes in here. But then I was like, if I was the thing, that's where I would have hid because then they would have known I was in
there. There you go. Very smart. But
he needs to replenish himself. He needs blood or whatever it is to keep going. And that's when the scientist is using his like smartness, his brainiac self to figure out where this thing is. And he doesn't tell them that he suspects it's in the greenhouse. And the military guys go off to go find their shit and he stays there and they find the dog that the alien ate. But at the same time, I'm like, they don't know if he's bad or good. And the doctor's right about that.
Well, that's true. So but it did kill 2 dogs, but they're like, that's because it was attacked by the dogs. And they're like, well, it tried to hurt that one dude that accidentally melted. And like, well, that's because he shot at it. So he's trying to rationalize every bit. Like, okay, this thing maybe isn't that bad, but it's still dangerous. So before we find out that the doctor has been using blood for his experiments, they go into the greenhouse and it was a couple of them. I can't remember how many, but the doctor's like, okay, so we got to keep this place, you know, whatever, protected. You 2 guys stay here and then we're going to switch off, you know, and whoever's going to protect, we're going to switch off. 2 guys get left behind and that's when the thing comes in and ends up killing these 2 guys. So again, I'm mad at this dude because he gets 2 of the airmen killed in there. And then, so now we're seeing like, again, the other airmen are like, now he's killing people. this thing is killing people. And again, the scientist is like, yeah, but maybe it's good and we need to talk to it. And let's have some cake and tea or whatever. It's just like, dude, it's like killing people now. And he just doesn't care. He's talking about, later on, he literally says, we can get killed. I was trying to think of the word he uses, but he's like, we can get killed. It doesn't matter as long as this thing survives that we can figure out what it is. So he's willing for everybody to die, maybe even himself, so that they could let this thing survive and they could talk to it and everything. Not for experiments. No, he doesn't want to perform experiments on it like that you usually see in these alien movies. He wants to be able to communicate with this thing.
He thinks it's smarter than them, obviously, because it flew from wherever the hell it was. And this, but you know what? He doesn't know that was the smart alien. That could have been the me alien who was just getting on the hop to come see what Earth was like. And the real smart one is still somewhere out there. They blew it up or something.
So it is Airman Brown. It's probably Airman Brown.
Yes. Yeah. That was it. This is the dumb one. This is the scared dumb one. Like, what the fuck? I need to survive. Let me suck the blood out of these things. And so everything gets fucked pretty quickly. And because of the storm outside, they're unable to communicate with Fogarty, which is like a main character because they say his name over and over, but we only saw him once in the beginning. And that's kind of funny to me because they're like Airman Fogarty or Captain Fogarty or whatever his rank was. What was he? Colonel? I don't know. they're like, we need to tell him this. And the reporter guy is like, oh, I can't wait to tell the world about this alien. They're like, no, you're not gonna. But they still let him keep writing and taking pictures of everything. And he's all excited. And this is the character that should have died. Because to me, it's like, you're in the way, dude. You're not even supposed to be out here. You just want to tell the world. And really, is the world ready to know about the thing? And that's like scary to me. I'd rather not know about that. Right? Like, I don't want to know about aliens. I don't want to know that they're sucking our blood out like vampires.
Exactly. Don't tell me what's going on in North Pole. Don't tell me about what's going on in Antarctica. I'm good. I'm really good. Yeah. Although I want to go to Antarctica. But anyways, that's another day.
Oh, yes. That'd be cool. But okay. So this alien too, when we next see him, he regenerated. So that's also another scary factor about him. Like, you blew his arm off. How are you going to kill this guy? This thing is loose out here in your base and no one's going outside because it's too fucking cold.
Yeah.
There's a big storm. They show all the snow flying around outside the whole time. Like, I was really focused on that because they really did show the snow and the wind in the background flying by the windows. And they need
keep barricading every room too. They keep barricading. And they're that means that the more they barricade, the smaller and smaller space they have to be in. And then they are trying to figure out how to kill it. Like Alma said, it's like they can't kill it. So they have to try to figure out. And then all of a sudden they lose power. They fucking lose power.
Yeah. And so it's going to get real cold real fast, which they're smiling about. That's what I love about that woman, the Nikki Nicholson in it, because she's like just smiling and just, what is she on? Maybe she's having a little bit of the cocaine that they had back then for the ailments to keep her, you know, to keep the women folk in line is what they used to do with, you know, tonics and whatnot. And so she's smiling and they're coming up with, let's burn this fucker. We've got kerosene. And that was a little funny part that I saw because they had the bucket of kerosene and one of the dudes is smoking above it. He's like, get that cigarette away from here. I would have slapped that fucker. What the hell? Get that shit the fuck out of here. He's smoking the cigarette. And this funny. Is where you see the best stuff back in the days of yore is that these stunts and everything they're doing is like real. The fire, everything is like closed in on them and anybody could have died. So how are these people? It's a real dangerous situation. They douse this thing with kerosene. And at one point, one of them gets another bucket of kerosene and throws it on him, like right in the face of the dude. And I want to know, was it the actor?
On the thing. I don't want anybody to think that they threw it on a dude. Yes, they threw it on the thing.
They could have burned anyone the way that they were just tossing the fire out. And there's Nikki again with her fire extinguisher smiling away. Woo! This is the best time I've ever had at Air Station number 9 out.
Oh,
in.
Yeah. She, I love her. She's so composed. She's more composed than the other guys there. Like Alma said, the thing came into the room where they were at. And after it caught on fire, it leaves. It goes outside and to put itself out. So again, it's outside and they have to start barricading again, but they just lost that room. They just keep losing rooms. Finally, they get into a little area and they get everybody. This is why where you see how many people they have there on that base. They get everybody into one room and they only have a few core that are going to protect that room and try to figure out how to kill this thing. And they saw that fire didn't do it. Although I would think that fire could do it if they just concentrated the fire and didn't let it go out. I'm being gross here. I'm like really like getting into detail. But
yeah, they could have tied it down put it in a pit hole. Like maybe they could have like dug a pit. Yeah. I don't know. They got the ice thing out of there pretty well. Just use those two pickaxe dude to dig a hole and fill it with kerosene and toss
them. Exactly. There you go. But nothing's working. They see that shooting doesn't work. It doesn't work. If they chop it up into pieces, is this going to grow its limbs or whatever back? So they decide that electricity is the best way to do it. And Alma, what do they do? How do they figure out, or what is this cool trap that they do for them? For the thing?
It's like a giant, what do they call it? Like a giant bug zapper? Is that how they described it? And they're laying out all the wire and they're laying down all these like planks. And what they want to do is they want to lead it towards them. And until they get to a point where they're going to electrocute this some bitch, they're going to electrocute this puta. they're just going to just burn it. And I guess electrocuting something until it's burned to a crisp is a good thing. Like if you want to get rid of it, but they need to trap it and slowly send it down this way. And they kind of do that like in the remake, because they're trying to lead it to a point where they can explode it. But in this case, they want to electrocute it to death. And but Dr. Carrington, well, he's going to be up to some shenanigans. He's the wild card. What is he going to do? Okay. The thing shows up and he wants to talk to the thing and he jumps in front of them and he's like, no, I'm good. See, I have no weapons. And he forgets that the thing doesn't speak English. And, you know, he's trying to communicate it with it, but he gets bitch slapped across the way, across the thing, and slams into a wall. And I'm like, is he dead? No. Later, they say he just broke his collar or whatever. But they're trying to lead him to a certain point. But the stupid doctor turned off the power and they need the power to electrocute the thing. So they end up putting back the power and then they, short circuit it? What would you call that? I don't know. Electrocute it?
Like, they electrocute it.
I guess that's what it's called. They got that's it. To it? The they point, don't have a fancy word for it.
Nope. They electrocute it because they had to get it to a certain point. So they kept letting it, like Alma said, they kept leading it towards them, but they need it in a very specific spot. And there was one point where the thing gets off of the planks because the planks are covering the chicken wire that's going to, you know, carry the electricity. So he gets off the planks and they're like, shit, you know, he's off the planks. So they throw something so he can get back onto the planks. And then I think it got a little too close for, you know, my comfort. And then they turn the switch and they're letting it electrocute and it's like dissolving in front of them. That's what it looks like shrinking,
dissolving. In fact, in order to get the stunt done properly, they used the smaller actor at one point to portray it. And I'm like, that was so smart because I think that they were so ahead of their time. Like they knew that they were operating within certain constraints and wanted it to look good. So they used the smaller actor at one point to show that, yes, it's like dissolving or getting smaller. It's shrinking up from being electrocuted until... They're like, how long are we supposed to do it? And it looks almost like they feel bad for what they're doing.
Well, one of the guys did. He's like, okay, that's enough. He's like, no. And he keeps electrocuting it. Yeah, it's like, no, that's not enough. What the fuck? Let it keep going till there's nothing left. That's enough. You want it to get back up and reanimate itself? I thought that was funny.
They need to like completely, what they should have done from that point too is put it in a bucket and keep burning it until it was nothing. And it was funny because at that point they pan over to the reporter who was supposed to be taking photos. And what does he do? He fucking passed out. He passed out. That was too much for him. And so the thing is dead. It's dead. And they're kind of excited about what they've done and what they have to share. And the storm is subsiding. And our reporter, why does he get to tell the world about it? I guess because he's a reporter and he's prepared a speech. Like he's that already.
Was so right. It looks like he had been practicing this thing because he was able to just tell it without any problem. So like Alma said, when the weather clears, we had Scotty who was at the radio and finally got through because the weather and everything was keeping them from communicating. They would only get little blips here and there. Like the Air Force was saying, don't kill this thing, keep it alive. First of all, the Air Force was saying, okay, keep it in the ice. And of course, it wasn't in the ice. Okay, now that it's running loose, keep it alive. They couldn't keep it alive because it was killing people. And then finally, it was dead. And then when the weather finally cleared and they were able to, like Alma said, get through the radio, that's when the report, they had miraculously on the other side, they had a room full of reporters in Anchorage. How did those reporters know to congregate there in front of the radio?
They were doing the beep, 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 all around the thing. Yeah, so they could get, gather around, beep, 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 beep.
So part of what he says is tell the world, tell this to everybody, wherever they are, watch the skies everywhere, keep looking, keep watching the skies. It's just like,
I would have screamed that for more added effect. Keep watching the sky. and this is, I think it's so great a film in itself. I honestly think it was a little long. It had too much. It was like, no, for me, I don't know why it felt like a long movie. It was good. It was like, you know, it didn't have any dull moments. It didn't have any down moments, but I honestly felt like it was still long for some reason. It just felt that way. I'm not saying they should have cut anything out because by the end of it, it's like, what could have they cut out? You know what I mean? They could have cut out anything. Everything's
pretty much set up well. Yeah, I don't think anything could have. I liked every little bit of it. I think everything was perfect for the movie because all these little details. But what you were saying earlier, as far as like with the black and white, how that hid stuff perfectly for some of the things. There is a colorized version that was released in 1989 on VHS. I wonder if we could find, well, a lot of things are being redistributed like digitally and all that. I would like to see the colorized version. You probably wouldn't, would you?
No. I always think that it looks a great quality sometimes, some things in black and white. And I'll skip it even if it's available. Like, I know that there is a colorized version of The Night of the Living Dead, and I've never watched that. I just think that the black and white holds up very well. I think that it hides a lot of things that they weren't able to accomplish. And the quality of it, it stands up very well to me. I like that when they were outside, it looked cold. And when they colorize it, are you going to be able to see like the film set more? Are you going to be able to see the creature a little bit outlined more that it doesn't look as effective? And so, well, you know, to leave it to my imagination, I'd rather have it like that. The screenplay changed the fundamental nature of the alien from the, it was supposed to have like, I think, red eyes and be green and have tentacles. And this one was a humanoid life form. And they did that because they weren't able to make a creature. Like they were trying to come up with a creature in makeup and practical effects that would look great. And they were like, no, it's just not working. We'll keep it out of focus and it'll be a lot better looking. And I agree. I think it looked great.
And also, I did want to mention that some critics have discussed how the movie contains commentary on the threat of communism and blah blah blah, all that stuff. That's not something I really want to get into because I mean I'm not edumacated like that. But there are some critics who talk about how the ties to communism and all that. But anyways, so everybody, that was The Thing from Another World. If you haven't watched it, well, we just spoiled it for you.
Dun, 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 dun,
but if
dun,
you still want to watch dun, it, dun, 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 we left out a lot of detail and it's really good. That was from a soap opera that you were doing. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I think it's From Another World. I think that's the name of
is
the
it from
soap
another
opera
world?
I was doing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's why I was doing that, but I don't know.
Okay, so, all right, everybody. Let's go ahead. If you haven't seen this movie, you have seen this movie, let us know your thoughts. Alma, where can people let us know their thoughts on our socials?
You can visit us at our website, nightmaremoviepodcast.com. Our Instagram is at Nightmare Movie Podcast. Our Twitter is at Nightmare on Fifth. That's Nightmare on 5th. Also, we have horrormovieblog.com, and our Twitter for that is at horrormovieblog. Dahlia has our Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee information.
So our Patreon is patreon.com/nightmaremoviepodcast, and our Buy Me a Coffee is buymeacoffee.com/nightmarepod. All of these links you can find in our show notes. And thank you, everybody. That was a super fun discussion. I had fun with this one. I love getting into these movies that are pre-1960 because we're going to be watching a lot of black and white movies. And it's fun to see the way they worked with that to their advantage. Like Alma said, with this one, they used it to their advantage to be able to make scarier things or to hide where they were filming and stuff like that. All right, everybody. Until next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.